Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello and welcome to another edition of STT Rewind. I'm your host Owen Hughes and joining me this week is Set the Tape writer and podcast regular Steve Norman. Coming up on the programme, in part one of the podcast, we kick things off with a post-apocalyptic film special as we prepare for A Quiet Place by being really loud and talky. In part two, we turn our attentions to TV for a catch-up on The Walking Dead and how it is slowly starting to rot away at its audience's patience, forcing us to ask the question whether apocalyptic scenarios are just not suited to the media, or if we are just not watching the right ones. And finally, in free play this week, we introduce a brand new competition with Set the Tape for your chance to win a 2-disc DVD copy of the recently remastered cult classic Threads on general release from Monday the 9th of April. Stay tuned to find out how to enter our competition later on in the episode. But for now, let's wrap up this intro and get on with the show. So let's kick off this apocalyptic themed podcast, as we would any other episode of STT Rewind, by talking about film. Or maybe we shouldn't talk about film. Maybe we shouldn't talk at all, Steve, as director John Krasinski's A Quiet Place is shushing audiences up and down the country as we speak. It's hit cinemas today. The film is out on Thursday. It stars its director alongside British actress and real-life wife, Emily Blunt, as a family of four navigate an apocalyptic wasteland, trying to not make a sound for fear of alerting creatures to their presence. By all accounts, the film sounds like an interesting premise, if nothing else, and the early reviews have been mostly favourable. In between this episode of STT Rewind coming out and our next one being recorded in a fortnight's time, we should also have Tony's review of A Quiet Place on the website at setthetape.com. And he'll let you know exactly what we thought of it. But Steve, apocalyptic thrillers. We've talked about them to death in the past. There's seemingly a dozen of them released every 2 seconds. Is it a genre or subgenre that you are a fan of, would you say?
It is, yeah. Just quickly, I think in 2 weeks' time, because of the stinking cold I've got, if I'm patient zero, we're not going to read Tony's review because it could all be over.
Mm-hmm.
I think in a lot of...
You've got that super strain of gonorrhea, right, that's been in the news.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
Yeah, super, yeah. Super clap. no, I think I like post-apocalyptic or dystopian, which I think is a debate we might end up having on this podcast, movies. But sometimes I think I like the idea or the concept of them more than I actually like the end product.
I would say that's true. I think I can still watch some really sort of low-budget, indie, post-apocalyptic films that are a bit conventional by the numbers and still get something out of it because I still quite like that concept as a whole. There's still something that's quite kind of appealing about
the end of the world,
seeing how people, yeah, but
dystopian future would be a nightmare because it just seems to escalate the class divide. Post-apocalyptic, brilliant, it's a great leveler. Like, how much money I earn doesn't matter, what I have doesn't matter, it's just, you know, survival of the fittest, to be quite cliched. So it's just absolute level me if the world were to end.
Do you think you'd do quite well in that scenario?
I don't do as well as anyone else. I mean, I might lose a few loved ones, yeah. but...
I mean, what would be quite interesting to know then is if you've got any particular favourites of the genre. Because I think if we separate them, if we do say there's a distinct divide that goes right down the middle of films that would be dystopian or anti-utopian, and films that are post-apocalyptic, if we focus mainly on those that are set in a almost wasteland, a futuristic version of Earth that's been decimated by something, whether it's zombies, whether it's a natural disaster, whether it's aliens, you know, nuclear war, whatever it may have been. That's what I think of as a sort of apocalyptic film. So is there anything within that boundary that you're particularly keen on?
I mean, a lot of zombie films are kind of just apocalyptic or even pre-apocalyptic because they take place at the outbreaks. So they're not yet post-apocalyptic. Mm. Mad Max is definitely up there. Yeah.
Although, I mean, I'm not a huge fan of the first Mad Max, as to be said. I like Mad Max 2. Mad Max 2 is brilliant. And Mad Max Fury Road, fantastic. The other two, I could take a leave. They've never done much for me.
Oh, right. I like the Mad Max films, especially Fury mm-hmm. Road.
Have you ever watched the Black and Chrome edition?
No, I spoke to a couple of people who had, and they didn't really say it was really worth, yeah. you know, watching.
I would agree. I bought it. I actually sort of handed money over because George Miller said it was the definitive version
yeah.
of his film, because the coloured version was too saturated because of where it was shot. You either had really saturated blues or really saturated oranges. And he thought if it was in black and white, it would be better. But I mean, he would say that because he's trying to flog another version of his film, isn't he? But
yeah,
got me hook, line, and sinker. But yeah, the Mad Max Fury Road as a whole is just a fantastic movie.
Just quickly reeling a few off the top of my head.
You're reading them off the top of your head. Yes, that is a talent.
It is. Yes. WALL-E, which was obviously the Pixar film, which when you think about it, is mm-hmm. post-apocalyptic. In a way, because Earth has ended, we've all left, we've ruined it.
That crosses between the two, I'd say.
Yeah.
I'd say it is post-apocalyptic, particularly the first half, and then the second half is very much an anti-utopian tale.
Yeah.
You know, along the lines of Brave New World or something like that.
28 Weeks Later.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Escape from LA, which is great fun.
Yes, yeah. And Escape from New York, I guess.
Yeah. To an extent, I Am Legend, although that's just mainly Will Smith doing something good in a bad film.
So, that is obviously based on Richard Matheson's novel.
Yes.
Which you're a huge fan of as well, right?
I'm
sure you told me before.
Yeah.
It's just an amazing, amazing novel. Really short, but just exceptional. But, that is definitely post-apocalyptic because almost the vast majority of it, save for flashback scenes, including within the book, and The Last Man on Earth with Vincent Price and the
Charlton
Heston Omega Man. They're all post-apocalyptic, I would say.
Yeah.
They take part 90% in a world that has been or sort of mankind that's been obliterated by a virus of sorts. Yeah. So it's a fantastic book. I mean, the amount of people who watch the Will Smith film and then aren't impressed. You go, the source material so good.
But there was Children of Men, which is quite a recent-ish film, which is...
And dealing in a similar way with the kind of virus, isn't it?
Yeah. Was that one is obviously, if people who don't know, for the human race stopped reproducing. We can't reproduce.
And one child's been born, hasn't it?
They come across a pregnant girl who they try to get somewhere that can help.
To Michael Caine.
Yes.
Pull his finger.
Yeah. I suppose he the original Planet of the Apes.
That is true.
I've just thrown a massive spoiler in there for anyone who's not seen it.
Oh, damn you all. Yeah, that's true, actually. Yeah, see, now that didn't occur to me at all in the sort of thought processes as we were putting this podcast together. But It is. That is a prime example of what we're talking about, I guess. It's set in an apocalyptic future for mankind, not so much for ape-kind.
No. And we're not talking about the Tim Burton one.
No, not at all.
Because Christ knows what happened in the ending of that one. Although apparently that ending is more akin to what the original book novel was.
Pierre Boulle's A Monkey Planet, which is...
That's a better name, isn't
Monkey
it?
Planet
Planet
is
of the Apes. Yeah. Monkey Planet's a far better name.
Especially as none of them are monkeys, even in the book. But I don't know, the book I think isn't as good as the film, and that doesn't happen very often. You don't usually get a situation where you go, film is better than the book, but Monkey Planet and Planet of the Apes, definitely an example of that. There's plenty. Have you seen A Boy and His Dog?
Yes.
Now, that is a weird one. There's something a bit weird and rapey about that film that's just uncomfortable.
Well, it's the boy, isn't it? The boy and his dog. The dog can talk to the boy telepathically.
Yes.
And the boy's just going around the end of the world trying to get his end away.
Effectively, yeah. That's it. It's and he meets an underground cult, and I mean, it's one of those films you can't really describe. You just have to go and watch it, don't you?
Yeah.
But yeah. So there's, I mean, as I think we've covered, there are so many apocalyptic or post-apocalyptic movies out there. Are you going to see A Quiet Place? Is it something you think you might?
Yes, I will. I've seen it. I like the look of it. It looks quite an interesting sort of, obviously, the post-apocalyptic thing. I like trying to find a horror that actually scares me. And I like the people involved in it. So hopefully it should all marry up into being quite a good film.
And we'll be talking about another film that's been remastered and is released on April 9th, which is Threads, which we've both seen, of course. And we'll be talking about that a bit later on. So straight on to TV, and we're continuing the post-apocalyptic theme because The Walking Dead, Steve, The Walking Dead is carrying on. It's persevering, it's shuffling its way across TV again, much to its own detriment, so I hear.
The biggest problem with it is none of the characters' actions and motivations seem to make sense anymore.
Right.
And it's just, I mean, as well as the storyline being quite repetitive, which I think I've said on this podcast before when we spoke about it, so we won't hopefully dwell too much
on it. No need to repeat that,
But it just seems to be, there's a bad guy, they try and stop the bad guy, then another bad guy comes along who's badder than the last bad guy, and they have to try and stop him as well.
Mm-hmm.
And usually different location in between the bad guys happens because they've wrecked the place that they were living. But yeah, it just, the motivations of some of the characters just don't make any sense, and the actions of them don't make any sense. You think, why are you doing that?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're meant to be this good moral person and you're just killing people willy-nilly. And I just keep watching it because I've invested that much time in it. I still want to know how it ends at the moment. But if it keeps being this bad for another couple of years, I just won't care anymore.
Yeah, just pin it off.
It's getting to the stage where something like Lost benefited from having an end date.
Mm-hmm.
And perhaps even something like Game of Thrones that's been given an end date might benefit from it. So perhaps The Walking Dead would benefit from saying, right, we're going to give this two more seasons and then we're wrapping it up. And they've got a goal to work towards then.
Mm.
But while it keeps being a ratings hit, that's probably not likely to happen.
No, I mean, it's the biggest show that AMC have got, isn't it?
Yeah, I know the ratings are dwindling a bit, but they're still hitting big numbers.
Mm.
I can't see that. That changing.
Yeah, I mean, I've just flicked onto Facebook and the first post that is on there, coincidentally, just says, why is The Walking Dead so rubbish lately? And they don't use the word rubbish. So, I mean, it seems to be generally the opinion that it's past its sell-by date now. Maybe just let it go. But, I mean, I think what's more interesting to come out of this, or a more interesting conversation we can have, Redness, I mean, post-apocalyptic TV shows. We were talking just before we started recording. Why aren't there as many of those as there are post-apocalyptic films? What is it that's so different? Because you'd think it would be a nice format to, that you could use as a, an episodic way of telling a story, is people in this environment.
And there's been a few that have been fairly good as well. I mean, it's not like, it can't be budget, because you just need to go to some, most city centres in the UK, you could probably make look like post-apocalyptic wasteland.
Yeah.
I mean, some of the cities you go to, the people look like mutants as well. So,
oh, dear.
I'm not going to name any cities and alienate some of our listeners.
No.
In 3 years.
You're right. It's quite a cheap way of making shows as well. You know, you just hang up a couple of battered railings around the place and some, you know, throw some rubbish
burnt
across
out
the floor.
Car and, yeah.
But the Walking Dead, I guess, is probably the biggest exponent of that kind of genre. But there are others. I mean, it had its own spin-off show, of course, Fear the Walking Dead, which I just couldn't stand. I might have even told you in the past, I got to the last ad break before the last episode of the most recent season, and I couldn't even be bothered to watch the last 15 minutes.
Yeah.
I just turned it off. I thought, I'm not interested. I do not care what happens to these people. I thought it was exceptionally bad as a TV show, and I was only watching it because it was there on my planner and I was trying to clear it off the list to make some more space. So I'd say that's not a very good example of how to do post-apocalyptic stories over a long-running series. What I thought did it quite well was Survivors on BBC, which was from 2008 to 2010. And
which was a remake as well, wasn't it?
It
of
was.
A 70s show. But yeah, I remember watching that when it was released, and yeah, enjoying it and being a bit disappointed in the way it ended, because it ended on a cliffhanger, didn't it?
It did. I mean, it ran for that amount of time. It ran for 2 years, I think, 2 or 3 years.
Yeah.
But it had 12 episodes because it's BBC, you know. They were quite short series, but I think they handled that story very well. It was about a flu virus that had wiped out most of mankind, and groups of people kind of gradually came together. It has Patterson Joseph, who most people will probably recognise from Peep Show, I imagine.
Yeah.
And Julie Graham was the kind of lead role in that series. And I just thought they showed how to bring a diverse group of different people into the story and keep you interested and have quite a substantial amount of world building going on. So it just all came together quite well, I thought.
The threat always seemed real in it, which is what you have to maintain. And you always feared for the characters, main characters, and they were likable for the most part as well. The people who you were following, so
they were kind of real people. I felt, you know, they weren't just they weren't a bit like The Walking Dead. You didn't have one guy who was just super exceptional with a crossbow and a motorbike. It was a group of struggling survivors. So that worked really well. I mean, is there anything that you can think of off the top of your head, or have you got it written there on the top of your head that you could read?
Yeah, from back in 1999, so I can only vaguely remember it, because I haven't actually been able to track down a copy or version to watch anywhere. But it was an ITV drama called The Last Train. And essentially, it was about... So there was an asteroid strike, an asteroid going to hit the Earth. This woman who was a scientist working with the MOD was on a train up to the facility where they're meant to be, like an ark, basically an ark. They're going to hibernate until everything all got better. But for whatever reason, she didn't get there on time. She was on a train. The cryogenic stuff that she had with her got set off in the strike and cryogenically froze everybody who was in her carriage on the train, and they all survived. And then it was about them waking up in this post-apocalyptic world, trying to find out what had happened to humanity and this research. She basically took them all trying to find the research station and her boyfriend, who was the chief scientist, and if I remember rightly, they ended up being awoken far, far, far longer in the future than what they thought they would be, and before had not descended, but they, you know, it was well down the line. It was sort of ancestors of them, and they'd all gone a bit sort of Bronze Age tribal. Mm-hmm. But I remember that being quite good. But like I say, it's been a long time since it was aired, and a long time since I've seen it. But
was it a BBC another BBC one? Do you know?
No, that was an ITV one.
Okay,
that ran for 2 seasons and again 12 episodes. No, 1 season, sorry, and 6 episodes.
Cool. I mean, when we first came up with this idea for the podcast, that we were going to theme it on a sort of post-apocalyptic tie into to A Quiet Place and to Threads, there was one episode of a TV show we both thought of almost. Well, you thought of it first, I think, to give you the credit,
yeah.
Which was Only Fools and Horses, which probably isn't an immediate, obvious choice for a category like this.
So there's one episode of Only Fools and Horses called The Russians Are Coming,
mm-hmm.
and obviously set in sort of the Cold War period. And it turns out that Dell has purchased or ended up coming across some lead. Mm-hmm. And it turns out that lead is actually a nuclear fallout shelter. So Rodney, being a bit more, I suppose, politically conscious than Dell, says that they should build the bomb shelter rather than sell it, just in case the Russians should attack. So it starts off with them building the shelter at Grandad's allotment, and then seeing if they can get there within 4 minutes, with, you know, from the 4 minute warning. The most of the episode is just the three of them, Rodney, Dell, and Grandad, in the bomb shelter, you know, just talking about what they do in case of the nuclear fallout. But also it's just a lot of good, quick dialogue just between the three of them in an enclosed space. There's no kind of big plot to it. It's just the three of them in the shelter just chatting nonsense. And
apparently the episode was based on a true story.
Right.
The writer, John Sullivan, he heard about a group of people who basically did the same thing that was in the episode, in that they got a load of lead and decided, well, we'll just build an air raid shelter instead. And it kind of inspired that episode. But I think it's one of those shows, isn't it, Only Fools and Horses? You could take those characters, put them into any sort of scenario, and, you know, them trying to beat a four-minute warning to get to a bomb shelter suddenly is comedy gold. It's just
making the point in the episode of no one knows what the 4 minute warning actually sounds like.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Time now for our free play section. And we're doing something slightly different this week in STT Rewind. So we mentioned it at the top of the show, but the BBC cult classic Threads has been remastered and is released on April 9th as a 2-disc special edition version of the original film set around a nuclear apocalypse up north, where it's already pretty grim and they make it look even grimmer. But 2-discs, special edition, special features, got a DVD audio commentary with Mick Jackson and Karen Meagher and historian Simon Farquhar. There's a PDF of the Radio Times included as well, with articles and letters from the original broadcast, as well as documentaries which detail the shooting of the original movie. Fantastic film. Restoration just looks incredible. And it was the first time that I watched this, Steve. I hadn't seen Threads before. Bloody hell, that's bleak.
Didn't they used to show it in schools?
They did, yeah. It was used as a kind of educational material because of, you know, nuclear warhead that was detonated over Sheffield, and then detailing how...
I wouldn't have been in school the next day. What's the point?
Yeah. I mean, it first aired in 1984, so that was 2 years before we were born. I mean, that was also the height of the Cold War and nuclear paranoia. And, you know, people were scared to death about the consequences of a nuclear winter. And so just, I mean, as watching it now and how horrifying it is, being like in the midst of when it was released and watching that, you're right. I don't think I'd have ever left the house again. I think I'd have just tried to turn my bedroom into a fortress and waited for death.
Yeah.
Because it is that bleak. Yeah. But anyway, so we're bringing this into Free Play this week rather than into film or TV, because we're running a competition. We're giving away the remastered version on DVD to one lucky winner. All you have to do is tweet into us at SetTheTape on Twitter and tweet in with how you would survive an apocalyptic scenario of your choosing. And we'll select the winner at random on Monday, 9th of April. So get your submissions into us anytime before midnight on Sunday, and we'll select the winner. But to give people a bit of a clue, a heads up to what kind of things might aid them in surviving a nuclear apocalypse, Steve, why don't you tell people how you would survive an apocalypse of your choosing? Doesn't have to be a nuclear one, of course. It could be zombies. It could be influenza virus, as we've talked about. It could be anything. What would you do?
Just give up.
Yeah, just give up.
Yeah, just give up. What's the point? See, they always make a big point of, even if it's a zombie apocalypse, that the biggest thing is other people. So you just need to isolate yourself as much as possible. I think people, some people suggest going to an island. I don't think that's a good idea, because if your boat gets knackered, then you're stuck. I think you need to find a castle, because they're always quite well defended. They've got big walls. Some of them might have a moat, which can be quite handy.
Historically, very strong defensively, aren't they, castles?
Yeah.
It's almost like that's what they were designed for.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you just need to find, doesn't matter whether it's a zombie apocalypse or some nuclear thing or a virus, and it's just other people that you're worried about, you find yourself a good castle and you get in there with some people that you can trust, and you'll be able to see it out. It's a very different prospect in England as it is to, if we have any American listeners.
Yeah.
I don't know about other countries, but America's obviously quite topical this at the moment. So if we were in America now, be a lot different, because I'd feel a lot more at risk in a post-apocalyptic situation, because somebody would most likely be able to get a gun from the supermarket and just shoot me. But in England, you got to probably go and find the house of some yardies or a barn that a farmer has, and you might find a gun there. It's not exactly like quite easy to find.
They might not be so, that willing to give it up either, you'd imagine.
No, you know. if they're still alive, they're going to want to keep hold of that gun themselves.
Now, I went to Restomel Castle at the weekend in Cornwall, and I have to say, I mean, strategically, not that great, I don't think. You know, you're right on top
Cornwall
of...
Cornwall itself, no one's going through Cornwall to get anywhere.
Yeah, unless, I mean, because there are lots of ports, of course, because people just sort of come up the rivers there. And, you know, it might be, I mean, if you were right in the heart of Cornwall, you'd probably have a better chance. But if you were near sort of Land's End or anywhere near a port, you know, you'd have that problem, wouldn't you? People trying to get there. Yeah. So what I would do, and I've thought about this, there's a house which is near where I live. And I reckon in a sort of post-apocalyptic scenario where you've got about a 99% chance of death from whatever it is, and you're one of the few survivors, I reckon most of those houses around there are going to be empty or emptyable. And so it's a nice, big, solid, like 8-foot wall that goes around it. You can't see in. Big, solid oak gate. It's a very posh house around there. I reckon I could, you know, sneak into there, try and hold that. It's got a nice big lot of land, so you could grow stuff. I think it, you know, that's that would do me.
Do you think you could kill another person?
Oh,
if,
no.
If it came to it?
I'd have
like
to just leave.
Like, stealing or raiding or robbing, you know, if you need some food and whatever and you break into some abandoned house and nick all the tinned beans and that, that's one thing. But actually having to kill somebody to survive, that's a whole different thing, isn't it?
I reckon I could loot if it was in a post-apocalyptic world. I don't think I'd have too much of a problem with looting. I wouldn't expect to, you know... I mean, it's one of the scenarios that's brought up in Threads. I don't know if you remember, but like a group of people go around looting houses and there's still a kind of police trying to maintain order. And they do them in because they go and instead of just stealing stuff, they kill the occupants of the house to take their food. And so, I mean, it depends, doesn't it? If you've got a kind of martial law in place where you still have some authority figures, I mean, I might even be a bit nervous about looting.
Well, that's sort of pre-apocalyptic, isn't it? Like, before it happens. Like, I think even in something like, say, Deep Impact, you see people, like, looting, like, the day before the asteroid shooter hit, like, looting TVs and things. You think, what's the point? What's that going to do for you? Like, for last day on Earth, why would you go and just nick, like, a 50-inch TV?
I'm going
to,
like, yeah.
All it's going to be on, if you do that, you go and nick your 50-inch TV from Curry's, you get it home, you set it up. All it's going to be on telly is news updates about the end of the world, that test screen thing, and probably E4 showing repeats of the Big Bang Theory.
That's, I mean, I guess as well, it depends, doesn't it, if it's localised, if it's just a post-apocalyptic thing in Britain, and nowhere else is taking us because of Brexit, Steve. They just decided Europe's just not letting us in.
Maybe Brexit will be the apocalypse for us.
Yeah, it could be.
Yeah,
no one knows what's going to happen, do they, Steve? That's going to happen
in
a year from now. We'll be Brexiting all over the shop, and then we'll be left in a post-apocalyptic Britain.
We'll be looting and murdering everywhere.
More so than usual.
And still recording the podcast.
Oh, definitely. This will still be going.
From our hidden bunker.
Yeah. Set up our microphone. Oh, we won't even have like a... What we'd have to do is just find old cassettes. Just record it onto cassettes and just leave them about... Just like set the tape on it. It would literally be recorded onto a tape. Thank you for listening to another episode of STT Rewind. You've been listening to me, Owen Hughes, and set the tape writer, Steve Norman, in our post-apocalyptic themed episode. If you enjoyed the show, leave us a rating and a review on iTunes or wherever you download your podcast from. And why not share the episode with friends on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or wherever else you like. Don't forget to enter our competition by tweeting us at SetTheTape with your idea for how to survive an apocalyptic scenario of your choosing. We'll select the winner at random on Monday the 9th of April. Entrants must be based in the UK and over 18. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back with another episode of STT Rewind in a fortnight's time.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
Do you ever feel like your brain is on overdrive and your mind is constantly racing? The plans, worries, and to-do lists are never ending. Calm can help your mind take a break from the noise by softening anxiety symptoms in the moment and helping you cope with day-to-day stressors. Calm is the number one app for sleep and meditation, giving you the power to calm your mind and change your life. For listeners of the show, Calm is offering an exclusive offer of 40% off a Calm premium subscription at calm.com/stressless. Go to calm.com/stressless for 40% off unlimited access to Calm's entire library. That's calm.com/stressless.